You are listening to engaging and exciting conversation on the Radiant Culture Podcast.
Get ready.
Now.
Welcome, everyone. You're listening to the Radiant Culture Podcast. My name is T-Mac.
And I'm Cookie Monster.
I'm joined by some handsome men today in the studio. Pastor E, what's up? See, you've been working out, huh? Here we see you.
It's just
sads,
it's press ups,
and
it's just some running.
Sads and press ups. Is that the advice you're giving people? Sads and press ups.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm getting older, so I'm losing weight. I'm just trying to live long.
Cooking more
sads and press ups. You know, you're like, we're joined by some handsome men, and their name is Pastor E.
Oh, yeah, and TJ.
Okay. It's cool.
TJ is the one who's recording us. Say hi to TJ, guys.
That's cool. I know where you live, right?
How are you, Pasty?
Hey, guys, I'm good. I am well. I think my standard response has become, I am alive.
Yeah.
Yeah, because, the challenges we have make you suddenly realize that to be alive is actually quite a victory.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know, and if you go around visiting people in different situations, I get a chance to visit people in hospitals and so forth, you start to realize that, wait a second, there's a lot of challenges around.
Yeah.
So being thankful for what I have and where I'm at right now is the highlight of my 24 hours every day.
And that's like a pretty good segue into what we want to be talking about today, because a lot of people are struggling with exactly that. Being grateful for where we are right now in this time in Zimbabwe. If you're not listening from Zim, I still think this podcast will be beneficial to you, because everyone faces struggles wherever they are. So it's a universal thing. But today we're talking about born for such a time as this. I know a lot of people my age, hashtag my born free, we hear a lot about the good old days, which we didn't really get to partake of. And we're like, couldn't I just have been born like 20 years earlier or 40 years earlier?
There were no cell phones. There were no cell phones.
Yeah, cool. Less distraction. No cell phones. A Zim dollar that could actually buy things, like that was actually real money. And there was electricity, there was water. Like, it seemed as though life was easy at some point in time. So we ask ourselves these questions, like, why am I born at this time? What is my actual purpose for being born right now in this country, this nationality, all of it? Like, is there really a reason, or did God just think, I think this one's for the struggle. I want this group. For the prospering times, this group. Like, how did he even
choose? It's crazy. I was attending an event last night. It was a business event that we host. And one of the things we were talking about there was just how toxic Twitter has become. You know, the amount of toxic content that's there. And toxic more in the sense that, especially if you're Zimbabwean, the amount of complaining. And listen, a lot of it is actually justified, if I can be honest. Because people are hurt, people are frustrated. So you can't fault them for that. However, you know, sometimes you're just thinking, yo, guys, come on. You know, and you can hear that heart's cry from people, where people are just saying, "Sha, we're tired. We just want things to work. We just want the country to work." Like, you see people saying things like, "Oh, I need to get out of this godforsaken land."
Yo, all these things. Yeah.
And you know, that's part of the basis for our discussion today, just to say, have we been, you know, you hear that phrase, born for such a time as this. But for us, for people in Zim especially, what is this, such a time as this? What is this?
Yeah. What is, exactly. It's almost like, what is this?
Yeah. So maybe Pastor E, we can just dive straight into it and begin the discussion.
Mm. Yeah. You know, it's a tough question to face. You know, when you start asking those questions, Kuti. Why are we, you know, what is our role, or what's our purpose, or what's our thing, you know, as a generation in a world like this, or in a country like this one? What's our thing? And I guess, we obviously didn't have a choice in where we were born and when we were born. But here we are.
Yeah.
And there must be a reason.
Yeah.
So for me, I always ended up that way to say, look, I didn't have a choice in the matter in terms of which family I would be born into, what skin color I would be, mm-hmm. what language I would speak, and what my upbringing would be like, and what the era of my adulthood would look like.
Yeah.
Right.
You know, as well. What the conditions, you know, would be during that time. I didn't have a say in all of that. So what is the reason? You know, it must mean that I have a role to play somehow in making all of this work, mm. or in moving myself or my generation forward. Because the thing is this, is that whichever way you look at it, no matter how hard things are, mm-hmm. no matter what kind of a bad deal it looks like you have, whether it's Zimbabwe or whether it's Somalia or whether it's Sudan or whether it is Tehran, mm-hmm. there is a reason. Why am I here? Why? And for me, I think the question should be more about that, the search for what am I here to do, rather than why am I in the situation.
Okay.
Do you know what I just thought of? Two particular stories of births in the Bible were born into eras which were very oppressive. Mm-hmm. Moses mm-hmm. and Jesus.
Yeah.
Like both mm-hmm. of them, like, Monty, when Jesus was born, there was actually...
Oh, yeah.
Herod was under, killing people.
Yeah. Exactly, and they were under Roman. They were under Roman rule.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's actually identical times in terms of Moses and Jesus, is that boys were actually being killed during that time. And believe it or not, some boys were killed.
Mm. Yeah.
And you know, and didn't make it, but some survived.
That's crazy, actually.
And so that is, again, you know, I want to kind of push us into thinking more about what it is we are here for, rather than why me, mm-hmm. why now, why here,
right?
Because it feels a little bit more like victim, like I'm a victim of my circumstances when we say why me, mm-hmm. you know. And there's a, look, again, there's a time for those questions to be asked. Yeah. I'm not saying they're invalid and we should never ask them, mm-hmm. but I think they should lead us to then asking the question, okay, so what am I here to do, or what are we collectively here to do,
right,
or to advance? Mm-hmm. And I think that's the big piece of the puzzle, that if a person finds, or if a generation finds, we are then happy to actually engage the circumstances,
yeah.
rather than run from the circumstance.
Mm, or vent about it on Twitter.
Yes, or vent, exactly. Yeah. Vent about it on Twitter. Or vilify it. I mean, when you talk about Twitter and social media in general, we people are ruthless with each other.
Yeah. Mm.
Go on Twitter and make a comment about something, or post something from your personal space or whatever it is. A lot of people do it hesitantly.
Yeah.
Because that could actually become it. You could trend for all the wrong reasons,
right?
Yeah.
You know, because of that. So I think sometimes there is a general lack of trying to discover why we are here, and so the kind of going sense kind of becomes, well, I guess we're just unlucky.
Yeah,
right.
I can identify that.
Yeah, I guess we're just unlucky. Mm. It's and maybe, I mean, if we're to be very direct about this, there are people that actually believe that they're unlucky to be born black.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or unlucky to be born in Africa. I remember when I was a kid, I went to school with, when I talk about a kid, I'm talking about primary school.
Yeah.
You know, where kids just say stuff out of, you know, kids will talk about bathing until vaita murungu, until they're a white person.
Yeah, but to my statements,
yes, but it was also statements from even our parents that talked about,
yeah, guys.
Or, don't you know?
Or when people had macaroni, because macaroni was not a very big meal amongst Africans back in the day.
Mm.
So when people had macaroni, or they had something fancy like lasagna or cheese,
and even today,
even now,
you know, people say things like that.
This is, you know, white people's food.
It's the fact that your boss, you call them murungu.
There you go.
Yeah.
So there is an element, I think, sometimes that people almost blame their circumstance for their, I won't say failure, or for their lack of progress, or they blame their circumstance for the opportunities that they don't have.
Mm. Yeah.
And there is a truth to the fact that sometimes there is a poverty that has been engineered mm-hmm. into particular races.
Yes.
So when you look back into apartheid in South Africa, or you look back into pre-independence era in Zimbabwe, the poverty was engineered.
Yeah.
It was put together for, you know, a certain ethnicity.
It was reserved for us.
Yeah, exactly.
So then,
in fact, actually our place is called reserves.
Yeah.
But so does that then mean we are actually unlucky?
I don't want to brand myself as being unlucky.
Uh-huh.
Because it classifies me as somebody who then perpetually is always on the back foot.
Right.
Okay. Now, again, while that may seem to be the case, because sometimes you find that coming from our part of the world, no matter where you go, you have to work twice as hard or 10 times as hard.
This is true.
To be at the same level with everyone else.
Sorry, you know what I just thought of?
Yeah.
No matter where you go.
There you go. What does that one Etamuzi mean?
Yeah, singing. You don't know what it means.
The funny thing is actually...
Hey, man, smack that jam, bro. I'm always jamming it in my car.
But what does one Etamuzi mean?
I don't know.
Should be interesting.
You should probably look it up. Going around to
play. Sorry, Pastor E, carry on.
So yeah, so now I lost my train of thought.
My bad.
Juanita Moss. So yeah, no, but I think what I was saying was so even though we have to work 10 times or 20 times as hard sometimes coming from this part of the world and being the skin color that we are, we have to work 10 times as hard. So you have to learn the language of the successful world, which is English, and try your best to speak it like them and even better sometimes.
Yeah.
You have to, but it's, people forget what we've had to overcome, where we are coming from.
Mm.
So for a lot of people, the journey to university in somewhere, in some country somewhere, began as a barefoot boy or girl, carrying water early in the morning at 4 a.m. or herding cattle. You know, if you know the story of a lady called Dr. Tererai Trent, she's a Zimbabwean.
Who was on Oprah, no?
Yes, she's the one who was on Oprah. She's a Zimbabwean. This is an amazing lady.
Right.
I mean, her story is just incredible. And what Dr. Tererai Trent did is, if I remember well, and I might get the story wrong, forgive me if I get it wrong, but you can search her story. But when she was a little girl, she wrote on a piece of paper the dreams that she would like to live and what she would like to see.
Mm-hmm.
And this was Kumusha in the rural areas where she stayed.
Mm-hmm.
And she folded this little piece of paper and put it into a little packet or something like that. And she put it under a stone.
Mm-hmm.
And years later, when she had, I mean, overcome some incredible challenges, she eventually got married, was in a very abusive relationship here in Zimbabwe, where I think the husband actually used to beat her at the time. And but eventually she, through a program that raised cattle called the Hafer program, she had some cows, I think, and she was able to use those to go to school and so forth, and then ended up in the U.S. where she was able to go with the whole family, and she got an education for herself, and then ended up on Oprah, and she wrote a book, and I mean, she's become such an icon that in New York City there's a statue of Dr. Tererai Trent.
What?
Yeah. There's a statue there. I think they revealed 4 or 5 statues of iconic, powerful women.
That's amazing.
Inspirational, iconic, powerful women. And one of those statues is Dr. Tererai Trent. Now, when you think about where she came from, and when I say, again, her story is, if I remember it right, again, forgive me if I'm wrong, her marriage was such an abusive marriage that when she left her husband, he then became sick. But this is the amazing thing that this woman did. She actually eventually took him. I think she took him to the States where she looked after him until he recovered or until he passed on. Again, you've got to check the story out to get the full detail of it. But I think she remarried and so forth and so forth. But it's an amazing story of growing up in a circumstance where you're asking yourself, why me?
Yeah.
And what is my call to life?
Yeah.
You know? So it's true. It's difficult to ask. I mean, I grew up in an era in Zimbabwe, born in the 1970s, and into the early 80s as a young guy, where the money worked, you know, and where when you traveled from Zimbabwe going somewhere, you were proud.
Yeah,
you know, you were some of the elite African travelers, you know, as a Zimbabwean.
Mm.
But now the tables have switched.
We have no passports, dude.
Yeah, and if you do, you are always held up at immigration,
always
being asked questions.
Randomly selected.
Oh, yeah. Yes. In fact, even before immigration, now they ask you at airports, you know. They pull you aside and they look at your passport and you know, ask, where is Zimbabwe? And I'm like, dude, what kind of a question is that?
Like, bruv.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Those are my initial thoughts.
Yeah. So, Pastor E, you know, maybe I also want us to bring in the sovereignty of God aspect into this because, you know, I think it's an important element of this whole thing, which is that the reason why people ask these questions, like, but why us? What have we done wrong? How come back then things worked? And we can even look back then and say, did things really work? Were things as amazing as people say? Because, you know, when people speak of the past, right, people always speak about the past in...
Romanticize
it a lot in glorious terms.
Mm-hmm.
But the reality is that we're also still under white rule, right?
Mm-hmm.
We're also, there were places that were very, there was a lot of racial segregation, even after independence. You know, there were neighborhoods that you knew that you would not see a black person there. There were certain areas that you just knew that, you know, black people are not going to be. So we also, I think we forget things like that, that there are many advancements that have been made, right, that we tend to overlook as we romanticize the past. But that's just a thing I wanted to throw in there. But my question is more along the lines of God's sovereignty, that yes, we're crying that, you know, things are not working the way we want them to, we've got frustrations, but how do we balance that with God's sovereign hand in everything that's happening?
You know what I find interesting about what you're saying is, you know, people have, whenever we do this, you know, the 80s were better or the 90s were better.
Yeah.
And the funny thing is that it depends which generation you're from.
Yeah,
I mean, the current generation will say, well, nah, the 90s were better.
Uh-huh.
You know, but the generation that was there in the 90s will tell you that the 90s are rubbish, the 80s were better.
Yeah.
You know, the generation that was there in the 80s will tell you that the 80s, this is just not it. The 70s were better.
Mm. Yeah.
So I find that it's human nature to compare where you are with where you used to be, and then conveniently forget the struggles of where you used to be,
right,
and only highlight the good,
you know,
the good of that era. But going to what you're saying about the sovereignty of God, in terms of where we are and what we are going through, you know, in our generation or in this era, I like to think that God is not caught by surprise concerning where we are and you know, and what we're a part of. I think that it is his divine plan that for the challenges that we have today, it is you and I that are supposed to be alive.
Yeah.
Therefore, we can't abdicate this position. We are made for this. If you got people from a previous generation to be in our position to face the next 30 years, they wouldn't make it.
Right.
They wouldn't make it.
I like that.
So I've often preached, you know, messages and I've said things like, when God thought about the best idea for the 2nd of July 2019, his best idea was you and me. Okay, so that must mean that there are certain abilities, certain capabilities within us individually, within us collectively, to be able to handle the challenges that we face today. This is the Bible that says, in some way, the New Testament, it says that God has given us everything pertaining to life and godliness. And in my mind, I like to think that we are pre-packed for this moment, for this era, for now, for the challenges that we face today. But let me also throw this in, because I've been thinking about this, not just all day today, getting ready for this discussion, but just in prior months. I think that it is fair to say that our struggles define who we are as a generation. So when you look at the previous generation, let's talk about Zimbabwe.
Mm-hmm.
The previous generation of black people in Zimbabwe, and we're talking about those that were that had become kind of like mid-20s, mid-30s adults in the 70s and 80s, the majority of those people were involved in the collective purpose of liberating Zimbabwe.
Yes.
Right.
That was the buzz you know, weren't everyone was geared towards that.
Liberation.
When Zimbabwe becomes free, you know, free education for all, equal access for this, one man, one vote, the abolishment of segregation, you know, all of these things that they never had.
Yeah.
And they gave themselves for that. And life became meaningful because of that.
Right. Yeah.
And they faced hardship knowing that this is our struggle and this is what we are driving towards.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Likewise, I think that when we discover as a generation and as much as an individual, when we discover what our struggle is, we start to uncover what our relevance is. And the biggest problem is that we have a generation that is trying to get out of a struggle rather than engaging a struggle.
That's profound.
And when I'm talking about struggle here, get me right, I'm not being political. I'm not talking about a political struggle that is one slice of the struggle. The struggle that you discover for yourself as a person, let me use another word, cause. The cause that you discover for yourself as a person will always reveal your relevance for that time. Struggles always define seasons. Our problem is that people are trying to get out of struggles instead of engaging struggles. What's your struggle? You see, the goal is not to be a struggleless person. If you're a struggleless person, you are not relevant. You're useless. You're not doing anything. The goal is to be a person who identifies their struggle and takes that struggle head on. Here's the question. It's not so much now we move from why are we here to what am I here to do? And the question then that begs is for you to know what you're here to do. Find out what your struggle is. What is your cause, Kuda? What is your cause, Tanya? What is it that you are waking up every day to say, this is the one thing that I'm giving my life for? I'd like to see this work. I'd like to see this happen. I'd like to build this. I'd like to progress that. Too few of us in our generation are living for causes.
You know what? That's amazing. And and thank you for raising that, Pastor E, because I find that there's almost a... there's this lostness that our generation now has. And maybe all this screaming and shouting and complaining about the things that are going on is almost an escapism that we have, where, you know, because we're not driven by any inner purpose, then it's easy to complain about, this is not working and that's not working, you know. And I think that's something that we all need to check, to say the things we complain about, is it just really us crying out for more convenience, or is there a deeper cry which is driven by a deeper purpose, you know, because we want to see something bigger than us happening. And I find that it's a bit of a struggle to find young people who have that that drive.
Look, I think what amazes me is the number of people who are not willing to pay a price and yet they want the biggest benefit.
Yeah, that's a lot of us.
Actually. This is not how life works, guys. This is not how life works. If you want something, you pay a price for it. Now, see, the era of free things and credit and the era of shortcuts, you know, is an era that has made a lot of people sit back and think, how can I pay as little as possible for the best in my life? Or how can I be as little involved or as less involved in a struggle as possible and yet eat the biggest piece of the cake?
That is so true.
Oh my gosh, guys, you know, I don't know how you people stumbled upon this discussion. We have to, you naturally as a person, you've got to gravitate towards a struggle. We don't run from struggles. We go to them because that's what life is. When you are born and you're a little baby in your mother's womb, getting out of there was not a smooth job.
Yeah.
She'll tell you. Yep.
Exactly. It was a struggle.
Yeah.
It was a struggle to get out and to be born into this world. To become is a struggle. So it's people who don't struggle for things don't value whatever they come across.
Yeah.
They don't.
Yeah.
So much of the the world you are seeing, even the Western world.
Yeah.
We were talking earlier on about how access to the internet has become a right for some people, and how they, for them, their life breaks down when they don't have access, you know, to the internet.
Like, you don't have Wi-Fi.
What? Like, what? That's
where
a problem?
Where did you come from?
Are you kidding me? Let me tell you what I don't have. I don't have water.
Mm.
I don't have electricity.
Yeah.
I don't have roads.
Mm.
I don't have medicine. I don't. You know what I mean? I don't have money.
I don't have a passport.
I don't have a passport.
Yeah.
Like, I had money in the bank and I woke up and it was gone.
Mm.
All right? I can't save in where I come from. And yet I own a car.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So there's something about engaging a struggle that builds within a person certain capabilities. There are half of the world in developed countries where everything works, and I have nothing wrong with everything working. Of course, we want everything to work.
Yeah.
But my point is, half of the world where everything works, if you took them and brought them here,
they wouldn't last.
And yet here you and I are thriving. That's not a good thing that we thrive in it, but we thrive nonetheless.
Yeah.
And it,
yeah.
So I think there is a way to look at the struggles you're going through. And I love young people. They call it the hustle.
Yeah.
You know, the hustle is getting up every day and deciding that, okay, despite these challenges, 1, 2, 3, 4, my goal is this one. And I'm going to have to find a way around these challenges to get to that goal.
Mm.
Yeah.
So, okay. So, like, I think of people like Martin Luther King, right? Everyone knows him. But he wasn't alone in what he accomplished. It was a whole community, a whole movement of people who got on board and they personalized what he was talking about. Obviously, they personally felt the pain of being treated as less than.
Mm-hmm.
And they wanted deep within them that equality, right? So because of that, you have the Rosa Parks. You have all these people who would also protest, who would also go to the streets, who would also refuse to sit at the back of the bus. It wasn't just Martin talking to a bunch of people and they just like, yeah, that's cool. Sounds great. Amen. Like it was.
No, you go for it.
They left that room and they also personally did something about it. And so when we remember that generation, remember, no, those were the guys who, you know, made a huge impact in terms of our civil rights.
Mm-hmm.
But I often wonder what will be said of my generation. Like, what will people 50 years from now look back and say, no, but that generation, they were responsible for A, B, C, D. And it really bothers me because I'm like, okay, even me personally, what am I really pushing for? Really?
And it's crazy, isn't it, when you think about it? When you look back in history and you see the colorful resemblance or the colorful presentation of generations gone by.
Yeah. Mm. Just on that note, on Sunday, this last Sunday, I led worship with Taps.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's around. Yeah, and
I know what you did.
We did History Maker.
I walked into church on time for once. And I was like, yes, History Maker!
You know, and I think how we came to that, we're actually reminiscing on
mm-hmm.
on those days. And we're thinking, you know, this song was such... What can I call it?
We felt those lyrics like we weren't just
You know what I said?
It was such a defining.
What's interesting about what you're saying? Because I'd met Taps just after the Sunday you guys did, so I knew about it.
Yeah.
He said, "Hey, we did History Maker," and I said, "What a lot of people didn't realize that History Maker was not a song we sang; it was a declaration we made."
Mm,
yeah,
it was.
You know, it was a declaration we made. But when you look back in history, and this is what I was going to say, when you look back in history, I mean, you just see the colorful way in which these generations are presented, what they did, what they achieved, what they overcame, what they gave us.
Collectively.
You know what I mean? Yes, collectively. And that's, again, for me, it leads me back to the question, what is our struggle as a generation? Because history remembers us by the obstacles we overcame.
Yeah.
History remembers us by the struggles that we engage.
That's deep, man.
So we look back at Martin Luther King and the civil rights movement and Rosa Parks and all of these people, and we can define them, all of them.
Yeah.
Even the bad people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They all caught up in the civil rights movement of the 60s.
Mm.
You look back in South Africa in 1977, an amazing story of the students who rose up and protested against the teaching of apartheid in the schools ahead of their own languages. And then, of course, the shooting of the students happened. And today we have June 16, Day of the African Child. But it took a life. Hector Peterson died for that and many other young people who stood up. But these were students.
Mm.
students who decided no. And they shaped an era in the struggle against apartheid. Yeah. You know what I mean? A very important era.
Do you think we're not angry enough? I feel like we have the anger, but it's not channeled towards anything, really. Like, we just release it.
I don't know whether it's not it's about being angry enough.
Yeah.
I think there is a lot of people that feel like somebody else must do it for them.
Yeah. Right.
And there is a certain amount of entitlement in that disposition of a generation, where people feel like, I want this, I want the result, but I don't want to get involved in the process.
Mm.
Someone else must go on the front line, do what needs to be done.
And we'll criticize them while they're doing
And I'll tweet about it.
Yes.
Guys, you know, you've just said something that just breaks my heart.
Yeah.
You know, we are so angry at the people that represent us, and yet we won't show up to represent us ourselves.
Mm.
Okay? I watched our... Now, there could be many reasons for this, and a lot of people could have different opinions about it. I watched parts of the Africa Cup of Nations in the last couple of days.
Mm.
And whatever the reason for the performance...
Yeah.
Of the boys.
The non-performance. Sorry. Okay.
Whatever the reason. And I'm not saying it mustn't be criticized. I'm not saying it mustn't be dissected and people have discussions about it. I think what I find problematic is the inability of people to understand what it's like on the front lines.
Mm. Yeah.
The inability of people to not relate to what it's like to be in the zone of action, to be in the line of fire.
Yeah.
Okay. So we look at what's going on in our country right now, and though it doesn't mean that everyone must be at the front line of speaking truth to power like I do.
Yeah.
I think that there has to be.
You're crazy.
Has to be a good number of people that say, I'm gonna find a way to show up.
Mm.
I'm gonna find a way to speak up. I'm gonna find a way to be present, not to abdicate, not to be the one that is sitting in the terrace saying, well, that was useless, you know, how
they
could
should
he
have done it
or
this
he should have done it this way.
Yeah.
How could he run away?
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, the worst time to run away was now.
Mm.
Now I get it.
Yeah.
From the terraces, it was the worst time.
Yeah.
But in the field of play, it was the best time to run.
But we almost got it, don't you think, when we, in November, whatever, 20, when was it? It feels like it was such a long time ago. 2017.
That day, yeah.
Yeah.
It's almost 20, as though we, 2017.
It was
the
first time I'd seen people really actually be willing to step outside their comfort zone a little bit. Although we still did it in a very Salah way, but still, it was done nonetheless.
Man, I rocked up in my J's, bro.
Shots had been fired.
I mean, again, guys, look, there's a lot of analysis and a lot of thoughts about November 2017 and how that went down. And I have to agree with you, the unity was just incredible. It's something we had never, ever seen before. You know, but also, the result of that was because the bar was quite low.
Yeah, true.
In terms of the barrier to entry.
That's true.
Into that part of the struggle.
Yeah.
You know, the bar, when the stakes are higher, fewer people show up.
Mm.
Yeah.
Let me go to the Bible on this.
Yes.
Because I think this makes a lot more sense. My favorite story is David and Goliath. And David showed up at the battle front lines when the stakes were at their very highest.
Mm.
Yeah.
And this is a guy who shows up. He's representing a generation of people. And in fact, when he shows up, he's not even wanted there.
Yeah.
You know? And I don't know what life must have been like for David. Again, I'm not sure what his disposition was all along. But having been anointed as king years earlier, and then gone through a number of years of seeing no palace, but actually spending time with sheep instead, must have done something to drive him crazy. If it was me, fine. When I then read the Psalms, I see that the guy, there was some kind of focus with David in terms of connection with the Lord.
Mm.
But it would have driven me nuts to think, but no, in now has given a prophecy that I'm going to be king. Why am I here with the sheep?
Yeah.
Why me? Why me with this sheep? In fact, you know what?
I'm king.
You know I'm king. So this nonsense needs to stop.
Yeah.
All right. But the guy sticks through with it. And things happen whilst he's looking after these sheep. You know, he then recounts it to Saul, if you remember, when Saul says to him, "Why do you think you can take on this giant?" He says, "Well, when your servant was looking after the sheep, a lion came and I grabbed him by the beard and tore him, and a bear came and I killed him too. And this uncircumcised Philistine shall be like the lion, and he shall also be like the bear."
Yeah.
And I think there's something that David realized that no, you don't circumnavigate struggles. You go for them. And you come out of on the other side knowing who you are, knowing what you are made of. So he stands before this guy, Goliath, and a whole generation of people is standing there who are his older brothers. And they ridicule him. They're like, "No, young man, do you know how long we have been
young
here?
Men. Small boy."
Yeah. So you know what one of the big struggles we have is?
Mm.
One of the big struggles we have is defining ourselves apart from the generation before us.
Mm.
Hmm.
Okay, so when they come out and they say things to us like, "No, Fana, I mean, you guys are weak.
Yeah,
you guys don't know anything.
Yeah,
about life." I think that there has to be a certain amount of pushback that says, "No, wait a second, guys. We are here to achieve and accomplish something.
Yeah,
and we have our own struggle. You guys took this thing to a certain level,
mm-hmm.
but where we are going from here on, us guys are going to take it on. Us guys are going to be present, you know, going forward."
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I think sometimes there is that fear and that sense. Imagine David had shown up to the battlefront, heard the Goliath say what he was saying. It would have been easy for him to sit back and say, "Hey, you guys have been doing this for a while.
Yeah.
Take it on."
Mm-hmm.
But the guy gets there and he realizes that, "No, wait a minute, these guys have run their course. They've come up to an obstacle that they have. This is my struggle."
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
"This is my struggle." Takes Goliath head on and changes everything.
Yeah.
Right? And redefines, you know, the season for himself and the season for the people of his time going forward from there.
Wow, I love that. I love that, Pastor E. And something that I also want to say, which will sort of tag on to what you've just said, is that I think another problem is that we're trying to define ourselves outside of God, right? Because I think there's something very profound about allowing our definition to come from God and from who God says we are. Because outside of that, we're going to be defined by the circumstances. We're going to be defined by everything else that's going on. But I think if we're to really stop and to say, "But what? Why has God created me? Why am I here now?" And we find our relevance and our significance in who He is. Yes, things are hard. Yes, things are tricky. But I think in that we'll begin to find a deeper purpose. But trying to define ourselves by everything else is a very slippery slope, because the world is going in all kinds of directions right now, you know, and the world is defining itself in its own ways. So I think it's important for us, especially as young people, to really stop and to say, "But yes, there's all these things going on, but God, what do you say about me?" Because, you know, you use the example of David. One of the most profound things about David was that David was a worshiper,
mm-hmm.
and his heart was dedicated to God. And how much are we willing to dedicate ourselves to God? You look at Daniel and the four boys, and the four Hebrew boys. They were dedicated to God. Moses, you know, just all these people who are used mightily of God in the Bible, even though things were difficult during their time, the one thing that set them apart was their commitment to God.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like, you know, in our generation, we're losing that. You know, even in the church, you know, we're losing that hunger for God, that drive to wanna do something great for God.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I think in the process we've lost ourselves, we've lost our identity, because we're trying to define ourselves by all sorts of other things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, mm-hmm. Really good.
It's interesting, you talk about that in terms of doing great things for God. I like to think of it as doing great things with God.
Wow, that's
You know, and I think the you hit the nail on the head is that trying to define ourselves outside of God's calling or God's purpose is always going to be a very dangerous thing, or a very tough route to kind of follow and sustain. Isaiah 43, around about verse 18 and verse 19, It actually starts off by saying, forget the former things. Mm. And then it says in the following verse, it says, see, I am doing a new thing.
Mm. Yeah.
Do you not perceive it?
Mm.
You know? And the trouble, I keep going back to finding out what is our struggle, what is our cause.
Yeah.
Do we see? So in that scripture, he says, see, I am doing a new thing. Not see, I might do a new thing. Or see if once you get it, we will do a new thing.
Yeah.
Or see, with your permission, I'll do it. Or see if you wake up in a good mood, I'm doing a new thing. He says, see, I am doing a new thing.
Mm-hmm.
Whether you're awake, whether you're asleep, whether you like it, or whether you're not, you need to see. I think another version says, behold.
Right.
You've got to see it.
Yeah.
Guys, I can't say this enough. We have to discover what our cause is. What our struggle is. We have to discover what is God's purpose for this time.
Yeah.
What's God's agenda for this time? And wherever that agenda goes, we will go as a people. And remember, God resources his agenda.
Yeah.
He does. God's word or God's purpose is blessed. To be blessed means is not so by the way, to be blessed does not just mean to be
one endowed.
Yes. You know,
whatever.
To just say, no, you are blessed, mm-hmm. you know, as a byword. To be blessed means to be resourced by God's grace.
Yeah.
It means to be affirmed by God. It means to be backed up by God. To be blessed means that God is not just with you, but he's in you for the purpose. And I remember Abraham, God kept saying to him, I will bless you.
Yeah.
And I will cause you to be the father of many nations.
Mm.
So there is a need for us to see what is our cause, what is our struggle. But you see, before it can become collective, it must be individual.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It must be individual. What is my cause as a person? Mm. One of the problems I have with a lot of young people in Zimbabwe, in Africa, is that we are causeless outside of ourselves being prosperous.
Okay.
Yeah.
Can we learn to have causes that are beyond us? Whether it is caring about the environment, or whether it is caring about the supply of water, or whether it is caring about elephants, or whether it is have a cause.
Yeah.
Have a cause. Now people say, no, you know, it's also we're black, you know. Our cause is always is survival. It's the worst cause.
Yeah, it's not a cause.
It's not a cause. Survival is not a cause. Now, look, I get it. We have a lot more to fight for, to fight through before we hit the mark than other people in other nations. It's fine. There's nothing we can do to change that.
Yeah.
But we got to get on with it.
Mm. Yeah.
So it's just we have to survive and chase a cause at the same time.
Yeah.
And I feel like we are, God has prepared us and planned us to be able to do both.
Yeah.
Life demands the excuse of, well, I come from poverty. So, you know, it just, I can't. Just do for me. Just, that argument is not going to cut it. It's not going to cut it.
Yeah.
If you, wherever you look at.
Yeah.
One of the most successful businesses to come out of Zimbabwe, or business people to come out of Zimbabwe, Strive Masiwa, if you follow his story, he struggled.
Yeah.
Now people come up with all sorts of stories that, you know, his business is a profiteering. Fine, that's a discussion for another day.
Yeah.
But look at what he went through. He believed he had a cause, and his cause was mobile telephone communication will become affordable for every person in Zimbabwe. I remember him saying that in an interview way back, and I thought to myself, this guy. This is craziness.
Mm.
Today, munhu wese ane phone. Okay.
I want it three.
So, what is your cause?
Yeah.
I think causes lead you to prosperity and even more.
Yeah.
And even if you didn't get the prosperity, your cause leaves you with the fulfillment.
Significance.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, it's relevance. It's beyond what money can buy. It's what history defines us. By the richest people in the world today still find causes to put their money behind.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wow.
And funnily enough, they usually direct them to Africa, where the people are just like, someone will come do it for us.
And, you know, an interesting thing also is that we look at all these developed countries and we, of course, they flourish in many ways. You know, they've got things that work and all of that. But we shouldn't forget the struggles that got them there. Mm-hmm. If you look at all these, you look at the U.S., I think tomorrow is actually 4th of July, Independence
mm-hmm.
Day,
yeah.
Right? If you look at Europe, if you study history, you'll understand that there's always been a struggle, and you're talking about struggle, you know, and a lot of the guys that are living now that are enjoying all these benefits are really benefits of struggles that other people went through to establish, you know, what they enjoy today as the free world. So, you know, it's very, I think it's very important what you're saying, Pastor E, that we need to understand our struggle. What battle are we fighting? What should we be fighting for? And then maybe we can start making noise about the right things. You know, not that we forget about the daily issues that we need to address. Of course, those need to be addressed. But I think we've got to be looking for something greater, something deeper.
Oh, yeah. I mean, and this, you know, the free world you talk about is also struggling with a generation that doesn't know what it is there for.
Yeah.
And what they're enjoying are the benefits of the struggle that their forefathers fought.
Yeah.
But they themselves, many of them, have become causeless generations.
Well, that's my rainbow.
Yeah, you know what I mean, they've become struggleless generations, and if I never say anything on this show mm-hmm. that is important, it is that a struggleless generation is a danger to themselves.
Wow,
TJ, you gotta tweet that, man.
Mm. Okay, it is a danger to themselves. If you come across a people with no struggle, they are a danger to themselves. Even if you come across a family that is rich and they have everything and they choose to have no struggle, they choose not to work, they choose not to engage, they are a danger to themselves. The greatest threat, the greatest threat to our existence is the failure to discover our struggle.
I think we're on a page, Abba.
Yeah. Yeah, because that's basically your closing words.
I think on that bombshell, like Jeremy Clarkson says, we're gonna end it. Thank you so much, Pastor E. This has been a very timely discussion.
Yeah.
Very timely. It's real, guys. It's real. And again, I think people always want discussions that give them the answer straight away.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
No, but again,
this one forces you to go find your own answer.
Again, because if I give you the answer, again, we've taken the struggle away.
Yeah.
You know, the process of finding it is the process of revealing it.
Mm. And I think what even makes it more profound, I've used this word a lot today, is the fact that it's coming from someone who's not just saying it, but someone who's actually...
In the struggle,
you know what I'm saying, and that's real. So thank you, Pastor E, and we respect the journey that you've taken, and I know it's come with a lot of problems
and
a lot of
sacrifices.
It always comes at a price, guys. Mm. You know, glad to face it with my brothers and sisters and
so
on. There are many people on the front lines.
Yeah. So guys, there you have it. You know, if you're wondering what your purpose is, or wondering why God has left you in this God-forsaken land.
Don't say that.
If not God-forsaken, God is right there in the struggle.
Yeah.
And let's find God in the struggle. And let's find ourselves in God in the struggle. Mm-hmm. And God is with us. And we really need to be... Yeah, Pastor E said it all. So from us at Radiant Culture, I'm Cookie Monster.
I am T-Mac.
We out.
Peace.
Peace.
Thank you for listening to this week's episode of the Radiant Culture Podcast. If you want to make a contribution, make a suggestion, or have a request, you can get in touch with us via email on radiant@thehub.co.zw or inbox us on Facebook and Twitter. Look out for the next episode and remember to share this one with everybody you know. God bless.
It's hot. It's fresh. It's uncut. #RealTalk on the Radiant Culture Podcast.